How do I maintain it all? Oh my gosh. Well, like we were discussing right before this, if I have a paid client that needs my attention, they get priority. So I definitely have had to move things around constantly.
Hi, and welcome to the Creative Solutions Podcast, where we interview cutting-edge creative artists, entrepreneurs, and innovators who are changing the world. We also bring you tips and techniques that you can implement. This episode is brought to you by my favorite productivity hack, the Brain FM app, this podcast's host, Podbean, as well as my book, Speak From Within. Hey there, and welcome to the Creative Solutions Podcast. I am your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. Super thankful that you took the time to be here and listen. Super thankful also and thrilled to have back one of my favorite guests. I want you to meet Rena Friedman-Watts. If you didn't listen to the last show with her on it, go and listen to that. And now you're going to want to listen to this episode because listen to this about her. She's a powerhouse with a diverse resume from NPR to reality TV and mega events. She's a connector extraordinaire. She's brought A-list guests on Kathy Heller's Don't Keep Your Day Job podcast. She's elevated the downloads from 4 million to nearly 15 million. So she's a hustler. She knows what she's doing. Rena's God-given talent for building communities shines through as she coaches entrepreneurs, secures book blurbs, and cultivates tons of thriving communities. With a diverse background and versatile skills, she effortlessly navigates various markets. She unlocks doors that others can't. That's really the best way to put it. She guides entrepreneurs to overcome obstacles, to secure initial clients, garners influencer blurbs for best-selling books, and aids in community building. She is out to help people in the most creative and innovative ways possible. That makes her a perfect guest, but also a dear friend. Now Rena's unraveling untold stories on her podcast, Better Call Daddy, weaving in wisdom from her trusted advisor, her dad. Rena, I'm so glad you're back on the show. Thank you so much for being here. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Wow. I just love listening to your voice and I'm so happy to reconnect. It's been too long.
I know. Every time we connect, we say that, oh my goodness, it's been way too long. We should do this more often. And then life gets in the way. And I know you are super, super busy, which is amazing. And you're doing all these incredible stuff. I do want to talk, as I mentioned to you before we even started the show, when we talked about you coming back to the show, the focus of the show has changed a lot more to be thinking about creativity and entrepreneurship, creative entrepreneurs, creative visionaries, creative innovators, all of that. And I know that you are one and you help creatives. You help people who are out there creating things. I want to, first of all, ask you how you are, but also in that journey, in the journey of collaborating with lots of different creators, I'd love to hear what insights you've gained about building those successful partnerships and fostering creative synergy and communities. I mean, you're on fire. So I would love to just jump right in and talk about that.
Yeah, I feel like the podcast is such a good way to let people know what you're up to in life, who you're connected to, and also it's art. And it's just amazing how when you don't think people are watching your progress or you don't think that people know that I was in a convention a couple of weeks ago, people do. And, you know, they might not immediately reach out to you, but this past week, I've had two people from two different chapters of my life reach out that, you know, I was shocked and delighted by. One guy who we knew from California. So that's, oh my God, like already 15 years ago, reached out to me. And, you know, he worked in Silicon Valley and he's getting ready to bring a new product to market. And I remember the first product he brought to market was this grape cutter. I forgot exactly the name of what he called it. I swear to God, it's like a grape guillotine.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's like, you know, how moms cut grapes in half so their kids don't choke on them. So he came up with like this OXO, you know, kitchen tool that you put a grape into and it perfectly cuts it in half. And, you know, it safely does that where kids can even have fun doing it. And so that was his first successful invention. And now he has created like this new game. And he knew that I'm a mompreneur and that I have four children and he sees what I do on social media. So he was like, look, I'm an inventor. I'm a tech guy. You know, I've done a crowdfunding campaign, but he's like, can I send you a game? Can you see if your kids would like it? And if they do like it, can you maybe like shoot some video of them playing my new game? Or we could come up with some campaigns together. And I'm like, I feel like as being a creative entrepreneur, it's does this interest me? Is this fun? Could it turn into business? Like, there's so many aspects to the work that we do. And so that interested me. The game looked fun. I loved how he was thinking about marketing it and the story behind it, and that he had been following my journey for the last 14, 15 years. It was so genuine. It was amazing. It didn't feel salesy at all. It was like, how can we combine our creative synergies and juices and interests to like benefit us both.
I'm
So
taking a
that.
second because that's so cool. Here's what's interesting to me about this is that I don't know if this is what you were planning to do, but the relationship you've just described is he came to you because you're an influencer, right? You are someone people know, like, and trust, someone people whose opinion people value. And that takes a lot of integrity, in addition to being incredibly creative, in addition to really walking your walk, as they say, or walking your talk. You are someone people trust, and that's something, especially with social media becoming, it's sort of we're moving into a new phase of social media and into AI and all of that, where things are going, where we're not going to know who to trust. Do you know what I mean? It's going to be this place of like, is this real? Is this authentic? Is this organic? And I don't think anybody would ever look at you and say no. And so I'm wondering about that. I'm wondering, within this relationship with this other creative that you are developing, what role does integrity play, and how do you cultivate that inside your own self?
That's such a great question. And I love that you brought up the question of integrity and trust. And I think that you form that in steps. Like you form that by, like he was like, hey, before you make me any introductions, before you have me on your podcast, before you introduce me to other podcasters, like let me send you it, see what you think of it, see if you love it. You might not even love it, you know? And thank you so much for even catching up with me and, you know, taking my call and being interested in what I'm doing. So I think in developing partnerships and relationships and opportunities and business, like you gotta start small and test it and do it in increments. It's the same thing with partnering with a brand. Like, you know, I could blast this audience that I've built. You know, I've got close to 800 people in a Facebook group and I never sell them. And, you know, if there's a tool that I use, I could do a webinar and like try to get a zillion signups or, you know, people who I'm daily talking to or I interact with more that I really feel like I could maybe use it, you know, maybe introduce them to the founder or introduce them to my contact at the brand and then be like, hey, if you like it as much as me, just would you mind using my affiliate code? I think that works a lot better than blasting your people and just swinging for the fences. Like, I'm all about personalization. And I think personalization and spending an hour on the phone with someone. Here's another example. I listened to a podcast. It's this girl that I knew from Chicago. She ran the summer camp at the JCC in Chicago for 18 years. And my kids went there and she was just sweet to my family. And then she went from running the camps at the JCC to then working for the Holocaust Museum to then now working for a mental health nonprofit in Chicago. And I saw that she launched a podcast and I listened and I was like, hey, I love your podcast. Just one pointer. You don't have an outro. And then she added an outro. I was like, thank you. I didn't even think that I needed an outro or a call to action. And so then we like got on and I felt like her vulnerability in that podcast and who she was picking to interview, like really spoke to me on a personal level. Like there's people in my own family that are having some mental health struggles right now. And I felt like from the stories that she covered, I felt comfortable enough in saying to her, like, can I have some resources? Can I share with you? And then we were just opening up to each other. And then from there, she's making introductions. I'm making introductions. How can we help each other further? I feel like a lot of my work has happened like that.
I think that's amazing, and I love that you're talking about it from that. It's step by, I always say to all my clients, step by step, and small steps are still steps, and you have to credit yourself with that. I think as I listen to you, I'm going, okay, so you're at a place now, and as podcasters, for however long we've been doing it, there was a point at which we were newbies. We were just starting out and kind of going, okay, how am I going to feel my way out and through this? And you had a bunch of TV experience and all of that, bringing it into podcasting. But it's a different kettle of corn when you're sitting in front of the microphone. You're like, okay, what am I going to talk about today? And yet within that, you have to find, in my mind, a sense of confidence to be able to do that and to be able to at some point go, hey, I love your show, and you could really use an outro. Like, you know your stuff well enough to be able to go, I'm gonna give you some guidance here. Take it or leave it, but this is something that I noticed. I'd love it if you could talk a little bit about how that developed in you. How did the confidence develop, and how did the awareness that it was time to become someone who gives advice in addition to soaking it up?
Oh, that's another wonderful question. I think the more creators that I collaborated with, the more ideas I had. And then alongside doing my own show, I also, for the last 3+ years, have been producing a healthcare podcast. And again, that totally came from a relationship. I was walking in the park with my husband and I think my 4-year-old and ran into a friend that had put together an event in Chicago. It was like a LinkedIn and coffee event. And she asked me to speak at it. And I, at the time, this was pre-podcast, I get nervous in front of crowds. Like, I'm really good at the one-on-one or like the radio environment, but in front of a big group of people, I get nervous. But I knew because she has like improv training and she's amazing at warming up the room. And I loved her. And it was only an event of like 40 people. So I felt like comfortable in that environment. So I said yes. And I knew one of the other speakers. So that too kind of put me at ease. And yeah, so I did that to just connect with her and get in front of more people. And it was just a great event. And I love events. I've done some event planning as well. And yeah, so I ran into this girl at the park and she was like, hey, I have a friend that's working for a healthcare company and they're looking for someone to produce an in-house podcast. So she had thought of me just from kind of like seeing me speak at one of her events and knowing about my television background. And I had one call with her contact at the company and they hired me. And I've been producing that show for over 3 years. So I've learned a lot by doing it and teaching others alongside doing it myself.
I love that. And I love it because it strikes something in me too. And that is, I know Marie Forleo calls it multi-passionate. I call it multiple streams, whatever the word is that you choose to use. One of the things that I'm hearing from you, Rena, is that I don't even know how to say it, is that you're not one thing. Right. There are some people who are specialists and there's some people who are more generalists. I'm much more of a generalist. I do 48 different things. I have 7 businesses going and I'm enjoying each one of them as much as I can. That's me. I feel like in listening to you, oh, I have my podcast and I do these events and I produce podcasts and I do this and I do that and I do this and I do that. And I'm a mom and I'm a mompreneur and I, blah, 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 all of these things that you do. And I would love to ask you about that part of it. How do you feel about being someone who's got multiple streams that you're so interested in and passionate about? And how do you maintain them all?
Your questions are so spot on. How do I maintain it all? Oh my gosh. Well, like we were discussing right before this, if I have a paid client that needs my attention, they get priority. So I definitely have had to move things around constantly. And to the point where, I mean, this is going to sound crazy, but like right now, my husband is traveling for work. last night, like my 11-year-old was watching my 4-year-old while I had a scheduled interview that had been on the calendar for like a month. Do my kids like babysitting each other? No, but it was only an hour and it was something that I had planned and I didn't want to let people down. I have honestly, this is probably some parents won't agree with this, but I have like let my kids go in a couple hours late, even if I have like an early recording and like, my husband can't take them to school. If I have a paid client, like sometimes it looks like that.
Yeah, and I think it can be messy. That's one of the things that I love about the work that we're doing as creative entrepreneurs is that sometimes you look at it and you see the paint splattered all over the metaphorical walls, and you kind of have to go, okay, I'm gonna put a frame around that and call it art, because it is messy. There are times when it is just all over the place, and you sometimes feel like you're playing catch up, and you sometimes feel like you're in that place of, holy crap, how am I going to get all of this done? But yet you do. And if not, then you make your excuses and you keep moving forward, like you said earlier, with small steps. So talk to me about that. When, and maybe you don't, maybe you're not like me at all. And maybe you're like, I'm so organized that it's all set and I never have to worry. But if you ever get to that point where things are feeling a little all over the place, what is your go-to to sort of get back into yourself? For me, it's meditation and yoga, but for you, it could be something else, whatever it is. What is your go-to to get back to yourself and to kind of go, okay, I can handle this, and this is how I'm going to?
Positive habits, incorporating positive habits. Yes, like meditation. Me and my 4-year-old have like favorite meditations that we listen to before bed just for us all to kind of settle down. Meditation is so healthy. Also, today, like a podcaster called me and she was like, hey, I have a live interview tomorrow. Can you give me some pointers around that? She's like, sorry, I'm on a Peloton right now doing my bike. I was like, ah, oh, you're so good. I'm going to get on the treadmill while I talk to you. So while I talked to her and was giving her some pointers, I literally was like, got on the treadmill for 50 minutes and we were just connecting as creators, which was so great. And I love accountability partners like that. I had another guy that asked me today, he said, I just took this course and I'm going through all of what I've learned and I'm looking for one accountability partner. I'm not looking for 80. Do you want to be it? And I'm like, yes, thank you for picking me. So I think a lot of how I've decided to navigate my career and my business and all of the things that I like doing are like, what's fun? What do I enjoy? What brings me joy? I follow that. Even, you and I, we both were interested in doing some radio work and I did that for about 9 months. And I learned a lot from it, and I got an upgraded setup. And again, you were saying, like, how did I know to suggest like outros? I learned more about creating trailers and 30-second spots and 60-second spots. And I got a lot out of it. But then when it felt like, I had gotten all that I could out of it, or that it really wasn't going in the direction that I expected, I was like, okay, that was great. And on to the next. And I think just here's some other really cool things that have come my way since I put that down. I connected with a guy who has a daddy-daughter podcast. I connected with him last night, Fun Fact Friday, with his daughter. And he also has like a podcast that he does that's scripted and he works with all voice actors. And, I work with voiceovers and voiceover actors. I've supervised voiceover sessions when I worked at Nanny 911. And then for this healthcare podcast that I do, it's a voice talent actor that has hosted the entire series. And I was like, I wonder if I could do that. Like, I'm sitting there doing circle takes with them and coaching them on how to sound. Let me try that. And so I reached out to this guy from Fun Fact Friday and the Meetus Pod and was like, if you're ever looking for a voice actor that, isn't looking to get paid, I would love to try it if you have like a part that you feel I would be suitable for. So he sent me a script and he told me that he takes submissions and he's given me a lot of feedback and a lot of pointers, and it is not as easy as it looks. I totally sucked the first try. But same thing with the radio. Like, the radio is not podcasting. There are nuances there, and I had to learn there, and I had to tighten things up, and I had to bring in the music sooner. And there was a learning curve there. I think do work that excites you, that you want to do the reps, that you want to get better, that you. That whole beginner's mind thing that you mentioned, do things that you suck at so that people are going to give you feedback and you can figure out whether you like it or you don't.
I love that so much. Absolutely. Yes. It's like me learning the piano right now. That's what I decided. I'm going to do 1 year of learning the piano, 25 minutes a day practice, no matter what. That is my goal. And oh my goodness, do I suck. I started at the beginning of November, and it is, when we're recording this, it is the end of February, and I'm still firmly in the suck category. But that's okay because I'm allowing myself to be a beginner and I'm allowing myself to discover things. And that's something I wanted to actually ask you about too. Something you posted recently was about the fact that you had gotten your first press pass. You had gone on a press event, and this is an amazing thing to me because I love doing these, and it was all about live interviews. And you said something before we started chatting today in the show. You were talking about how it's different to prepare for a live interview versus doing something like a podcast or even radio. So I'd love to chat with you a little bit about that part of it. First of all, what was the first press pass all about, if you are allowed to say? I don't know if you signed an NDA or not, but talk about that difference. Talk about the live interviews, what that feels like, and what you need to do differently from all of the other kinds of preparation that you've been doing.
Yeah, so I saw on Facebook that this guy, Mark McClure, was looking for people to be a part of his media booth at this oil and gas event. And my husband works in the oil and gas industry. So I thought, maybe I would meet people that would be good for him or and I love doing interviews. I mean, I've done over 350 of them. So I was like, hey, those times work. I love events, all of the things. I was like, and he's got all the equipment, he's got the setup, he's got the booth, he's getting me in free. So I went with like very little expectations of just let's see how he does it.
Right.
Let's see who I can meet. Let's see what this event is all about. It was like my first big event. I got free admission. He's got the setup. It just sounded like fun. And he only picked a couple of people to do it. And I had already, he had seen kind of what I had done with my own podcast. So that was enough proof to get me in. And I didn't even know whether he was going to be doing the editing or he was going to be doing the interviewing or who my guests were going to be, any of that. I was just like, hey, I'm getting in free. He's got the setup. Let's try this. So I go and I'm like stopping at different booths, the ones that have the best schlock. And going up to people, and I'm like, hey, I'm part of the media booth. If you want to come over and tell your story. And I just did that to like four or five people. And then one showed up, and it was her first time at the NAEP Expo Summit. And then I like wrangled another host that actually works for Mark. And we had been in conversation. And I said, hey, do you want to co-host one of these with me? And so she's already a pro. And she does live events more than I do. And so we just sat down with somebody who brought energy and excitement and wanted to tell her stories and wanted to talk about her services and how she had reinvented herself like mid-career. I think she was like in her 50s or something. And there was just so much positivity from that. And I just loved it. And I feel like if you talk about the excitement and enthusiasm and what you love doing, then more of those opportunities come your way.
Okay. So, yay, and I still want to ask you about how you prepare differently
Oh, thank
for
you.
these.
Thank
No,
you.
that's fine. And I will come back to it. So I'll say and. Before we get there, this is something I wanted to ask you. You said this earlier, and I love, love, love it. And I would love to get your take on it. And you just said it again. You said doing what you love is going to get you more of the stuff you love to do. Some paraphrasing, but that's essentially what you said. And I want to talk to you, and I want to ask you about looking inside yourself. Like, there are so many people who have imposter syndrome, and there are so many people who feel like they don't deserve to do what they love, you know, that they're like, okay, this is the only work I'm suited for. This is the only work I'm good for. And it's not the work that calls to my soul, but it's what I have to do. And let me preface all of these questions with, I recognize that different people have different economic situations, and not everybody can just go, you know what, screw it all, I'm gonna go and do whatever I want. And I recognize that. If you're in a situation, though, that you have the chance, you have the opportunity, Rena, I'd love it if you would talk, give your perspective on that, the feeling of empowerment that I think it is empowerment and entitlement to the good stuff that it takes to let yourself go, you know what? I'm going to focus on what I love to do. Stepping away from the money for a minute, because everyone's hustling for money. Can you talk about the in sort of the internal processes, the inner processes that go on or went on in you to get to the point where you're going, you know what? I am going to focus on the thing that feeds my spirit, and that will beget more things that feed my spirit, which will hopefully, of course, eventually make money. But that part of it, can you talk about that a little bit, please?
There have been shifts, you know, like even in the intro that you read, like I had a best-selling author reach out to me and ask me if I could get her some hard to reach people to do testimonials for her book. The thing is that she gave me a list of people and I was already connected to a few of them. So it felt like a calculated risk in saying, yes, I could do that for her. And I liked her. We had done other business together in the past, so I felt comfortable reaching out on her behalf. But then I had another author reach out to me and I didn't have the same working relationship. She was a fan of mine. I'd been on her podcast. She had much harder to reach people and I wasn't connected to any of them. And I said, look, I guarantee you I can reach some of those people, but I can't guarantee you that I'll get a yes. Are you willing to take that risk? Because it is a risk. It's not a guarantee. And then, you know, I was able to reach some of them for her, but unfortunately they didn't want to give testimonials to her book. And I was like, do I even really like doing that?
Right.
You know, is that the best use of my time for the small fee that I'm charging for that? Right. So that to me didn't even necessarily, like, you really have to weigh what is the best use of your time. Do you really love doing that? I have recreated myself and offered so many different services. Like, same thing with even producing other people's podcasts, right? Like, I have a corporate client that I do that for. Can I do that for entrepreneurs that don't have the same budget and expect me to do just as much work? No. Like, this is the price of all of what that entails, right? I can do pieces for you. I can do shorter coaching sessions for you and get you to the point where you can do it yourself. But if you want me to do everything for you, here's what I charge for that.
Right. And I love that you said that, because I'm going to actually clarify, and correct me if I'm wrong. It's not that you can't, it's that you're choosing not to.
Yes.
Right? You could.
Yeah.
And part of that is knowing what you're worth and charging what you're worth. And that's something that I'm a stickler about, because especially creatives, we're so often told, you know what? You know, don't quit your day job, because the day job is what pays your bills. And the creativity is just something you do afterwards. And it sticks in my craw, because
yes,
this is valid work that deserves financial reward and compensation, and knowing your worth. And again, there's that inner confidence that I know that I really want to sort of give you the props for, because so many people undercharge, right? And that's an important facet of this, is that you went, you know what, this is my rate. And if you can't meet this rate, I can do less for you at a lower rate, but I cannot do the premier service for the lower rate. Talk about that.
Yeah.
I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Because I've tried to do it for less, and then, you know, it makes me not happy with the work that I'm doing, because it's too much work for less money.
Right.
And I already have somebody that will pay a higher price point even for less work.
Right.
And also, if you know what your competitors are charging and the setup of what your competitors are doing. So I even think it's important to do research around that. Like, what are other editors charging? What are other producers charging? Like, I know what I got paid 20 years ago. You know what I mean? So it's knowing what the market will pay, and you got to know all the inner workings too, like all of the steps. Like, what do social media managers charge? What do editors charge? What do producers charge? What do producers do? Right? Are you just writing the script? Are you handling the edit? Do they want you to sit on the recording? Do they want you to type up the SEO copy? There's a lot of steps. Do they want you to manage the web team? Do they want you to manage the editor? Right? So there's a lot of different pieces.
Sure. And it's interesting because, like, an example from my own life, one of the things that I do is I've started being a booking agent for performers and musicians in New York City and the DC area. And I got a call for a gig that I could not do myself. So I'm like, okay, I will farm it out. I'll go, okay, let me find someone else who can do this job. And she gave me her rate, and I went, oh no, we're gonna at least double that, maybe triple. And her jaw dropped to her feet. And I said, you don't want to undercharge. And a friend of mine, Eric Henning, who does my Money Mondays, it's money for creatives essentially. He's a guest on the show once a month. He said something that I think is fabulous. He said, if you don't quote a rate that makes them raise their eyebrows when they hear it, you are quoting too little. And I went, oh, that's brilliant. And it really, this is one of those things where, yeah, they might come back and say that's too much, but at least you can negotiate down to something that you find fine or palatable. But it is different though when you're talking about live music, for example, when as opposed to pre-recorded. Live is a whole other kettle of corn, and you have to charge accordingly. And so with live anything, it's different. It's going to be so much more sort of razor's edge, right? And something you said that I really want to come back to, and I know I said I'd come back to this question, doing these live interviews when you were doing the press pass work at, you said NAPE, I think, conference.
Yeah, the North American Prospect Expo. It's
Got
like
it.
the largest oil and gas event, I think, in the nation.
Cool. Okay. So when you're in that space, when you're working to do that, so I'm not going to ask you about your money for that, but you definitely have, like any performer or entertainer, you have a routine, a way of preparing for doing it. And you said something before we started that I'm sort of circling back to. You said it's different. It's different preparing for something that's live, as opposed to something like a podcast that's pre-recorded. Can you talk a little bit about what's different about that, sort of the preparation on the outside, but also what's different in your own internal process as you prepare for something that's live, as opposed to I'm going to record my podcast?
Well, live, you can't be in your pajamas. That's the first thing. You need to be put together. So when I'm recording something in person, I am much more presentable. I think, whatever version of that for you is appropriate. But like this girl who I was talking to today, I was like, if you feel more confident getting a blowout or, getting your hair done or your makeup done or fake eyelashes or whatever you want to do that makes you feel confident, I would do that. I think that's something to think about. Also, if you're going to be at a trade show and you're going to be doing a lot of walking around, I learned the hard way, like, don't wear heels. You
For
want
sure.
to wear a wedge, you want to wear comfortable shoes. But yeah, like, also you want to look professional. I think appearance in person matters much more. Also, if you can, and this isn't different because, when you're on other people's podcasts, you want to listen to them. But if you know that you're going to be interviewing certain people, have they ever been on a podcast before? Like, what is on their social media? What do they like talking about? How can you find common ground with the person that you're going to be interviewing or you're going to be co-hosting with? So what's funny about the co-host that I ended up doing one of the interviews with, I met her at the cocktail night the night before. And I, it was a little bit intimidating because you're like in this dark room, like kind of in a bar environment, and there were, 10 other people at the table, and you get a very short introduction to the person. So you don't really read them well. But in the morning, we started talking about coffee. And then she told me that she was adopted by a Jewish family. And that was like our common ground. I was like, oh, wow, cool. Like, what was that like? What has your relationship to the Jewish community be? So I felt like we connected there, and that like really broke the ice, so to speak, where I knew then that she kind of liked me, So that was nice. And then another guy that I co-hosted another segment with, I told him that I had a podcast with my dad. He was like, oh, I'm a dad to daughters. So instantly that was like a common ground thing. And I was like, oh, tell me about that. How old are your daughters? So then when we were doing an interview, we had already broken the ice. Like, I feel like you need to find something, some kind of common ground to like go into it warmly.
Yeah, and I love that. I call it connection points. Where are those touchstones that we can both go, oh yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. And for us, you mentioned actually a sort of a common touch point is that radio thing that I almost did and that you did for a while. And I want to circle back to that a little bit actually, because we're talking about, you know, you're a podcaster, you're obviously really good at so many different things, and you did this radio thing for a while, but you said that you learned a lot. And I imagine that new knowledge has sort of found its way into all of the other things you do. I would love to sort of transition, if you would, from these live interviews. Did you apply any of the stuff you learned in radio? And also, what else? What else can you apply that knowledge to in the creative work that you're doing now and into the future?
Great question. One thing that I had kind of forgotten that I was like re-reminded about in doing the radio thing is that you're really talking to one person.
Mm.
And I was told multiple times to like put a picture of someone next to my computer. And I put a picture of Jerry Springer there because it was like such a fun chapter of my life and where my career began. And, you know, I've gotten to interview Jerry and he's like very validating for me. So I put a picture of Jerry next to my computer and I honestly sometimes talk to him.
For sure. For sure.
So that was something that I took away from it. And then also even in my introductions, I keep them much shorter now.
Mm.
Because I learned the rule of threes is that people can only remember three things. I didn't really know that. So a lot of times when radio announcers do breaks, they say their name, the name of the station, and then one other thing.
Right. Right. And it's interesting because you have the FCC requires legal IDs at the top of the hour, which is the call sign and the name of the radio, say like where you are and where it is on the AM or FM dial. That's required. And so there's that two of the three and then the person's name, boom, and then you're done. And it is something that's actually legally required. So you hit on something that is very crucial and critical as part of the entire industry. Please continue.
Yeah, so those I felt like were good reminders. But another thing too is I feel like I've started incorporating other creators into my process more. So I saw on Twitter that somebody said, hey, I love when creators introduce themselves, their show, and then my show. I was like, that's like that three rule thing. That's fun. And so I replicated that, credited the guy who wrote it the first time, and was like, I would love other people to announce themselves, their show, and then my show. And if you want to throw in something about how you're a daddy's girl, or yeah, you better call daddy, or get creative, I'm open to that. And I, from doing that, I got like, I don't know, 10 or 15 submissions. And then I was like, wow, I could take all of these and do a mashup, or I could take one or two of these and put them back to back if their shows complement each other. And then I was like, man, I could extend that and be like, hey, if you have a trailer and want to do a trailer swap, I could throw trailers at the end of Better Call Daddy. Or if there's a podcasting event coming up or a book release coming up, like there's so many ways in which you can like mix up your show. Like I change the intro to my podcast every season. I kind of freshen it up or add like a new transition or things like that. But you can do something at the beginning. You can do something at the end. You can do something mid-roll. And it's just made me like really want to test that out more.
That is so cool. And what a great idea. I love the fact that you are being so innovative with your show. I mean, and that's actually, I've got to just stop for a second and say that. That's one of the things I love about podcasting and I love about your show. First of all, your show is very real. And if you have not listened to the Better Call Daddy podcast, go listen to it. But it's so interesting with the podcast. I was talking to one of my podcasting clients and I said, you have to remember, in many ways, this is the Wild West. There are no regulations. We get to do what we want as long as we mark it explicit. If it's going to be explicit, you basically get to do whatever you want with your show. And that may change at some point, but right now we get to do what we want. And you found yourself a niche, I think, that is so fascinating, because I remember from when I was on your show, it's very, you go deep very fast. It gets very personal. And,
yeah,
and
I probably should warn people, but then they might not like it, you know, to divulge it quickly.
But the thing is, though, that's the thing. I'm not very personal when it comes to like sharing all my deep, dark secrets and weird family history. And I did on your show. And that's because you yourself made it very easy. You made it very comfortable. And that makes it so fascinating to me to listen to you, but also to see what you're doing with other people, some of your clients that might be stuck in some way or not able to get to that place of, and I hate using the word authenticity, but it's the only one we've got, not able to get to that place where they're really who they are. So I would love it if you would talk a little bit about that. When you find your clients, your own sort of the entrepreneurs that you're working to coach, when you find them in that place where they're not able to just to open that part of themselves up, what is your guidance to them? What challenges do you think that they face? And how do you guide them in overcoming those obstacles and challenges?
This is going to sound funny, but I learned this very early on at the Jerry Springer show, kind of like, if you're willing to lift your shirt up too, then other people are.
Mm.
I have found that if you're willing to get personal and you're willing to tell people your struggles and your hardships and like the details of that, then other people will really divulge back. I think that that is a secret weapon, to be honest. And another thing that I've really started doing is I do pre-chats, because I, to be honest, like at this stage of the game, have to make sure that I'm picking people that are comfortable and healed from their trauma and comfortable enough sharing, because I like you, like don't want to cut out major chunks of the conversation. I had somebody like who's done so many reach out to me after I'd aired the episode like a month and a half. And he was like, hey, could you cut that part out about my daughter? I was like, no, because that was like the best part of your story. And he was like, I know it was totally my fault. Like I overshared. And I get that. But I also tell people, like, you know, if you're not wanting to share something, you got to self-edit. And I think that's actually a really good tip to tell people, like, if you're going on somebody's show, you got to be able to self-edit, and you have to be healed enough. I've actually told people, hey, I don't think you're healed enough to talk about that. Like, this just happened. Thank you so much for like sharing that with me, but I don't want you to regret oversharing and like want me to take it down or want me to cut out chunks of that. So like, let's think about this for a little bit and maybe revisit it down the road.
And that's such a smart thing to do, because I've had similar things, and I've told people, I don't edit, so you need to be aware of what you're saying. Because if you're not, if you get to a place where you're like, oh, I needed to get it all out, and now I'm really sorry I did it for something the whole world can access if they want to. At that point, I go, okay, at some point, you have to, like you said, self-edit. And also, you know what you want to talk about and know what's off limits inside yourself. That's so important, because communication is a two-way street, and you've decided you want to be on a podcast and talk about things. So you need to know what you're doing a little bit. So I love that you said that whole notion of sort of self-editing and communication. And in my mind, communication style. Can you talk a little bit about how you developed that communication style? Was it the work you were doing? Was it interior work? How did your communication skills develop, and where do you see yourself taking them moving forward?
I think that my communication skills definitely developed through casting individuals for TV. Because what I realized from doing that was you need to make people trust and like you and feel like they're your friend in order for people to want to come and be on the show, to get on an airplane, to get on a bus, to get on a train, to want to spill their guts in front of a audience, like a live audience. They have to feel very prepared and comfortable and like know what you expect from them.
Right.
Also, and even the corporate world, and in order to get people to come to your events, your lunch and learns, spend time with you, interrupt their day, show up somewhere, they have to like you.
even in working in financial services, to want to listen to the services that you provide or the new tools that you have. Again, there's a trust factor. You have to be able to listen to people. You have to be able to read people. You have to share things about yourself. I think all of those things really have built upon each other. I mean, I've helped plan events for 50 people, 75 people, hundreds of people. And again, it's a one-on-one caring about people approach. It's taking the time to follow up with people, asking about what's happening in their life. Like, even before this interview, I went back and listened to our conversation that we had in 2022. I wanted to like maybe even expand on some of what we covered before. And I also listened to episodes of your podcast to make sure that I knew about the changes in direction and that I could add value around what you're covering now. So I feel like that even applies to how do you prepare for interviews. You prepare for interviews by like knowing the language that people use, knowing what they post on social media and care about, knowing what they're up to in their career. Like, there's so much information about people online now. Like, you can really know a lot about people by other interviews that they've done, by things they post, and by conversations that you've had. Like, you should take notes of those things.
I love that you said that. I really do, because it leads me perfectly into a word that I think really sort of describes you, and that is community, right? That's one of the things that I see you excel at, is cultivating communities that are engaging and engaged, it's because you yourself are engaged, right? You yourself you care about the people. So I would love if you would talk a little bit about that part of it. What is the best way to cultivate a community, and especially for creatives, especially for people who are creators? And I don't mean just content creators online. I mean artists and performers and people who are trying to innovate, who are trying to push boundaries and push the limits. How do you think someone like that ought to begin to establish and grow their own communities?
My best advice around that is, where do you feel comfortable creating a community? So for me, I had multiple jobs, like in the corporate world, reaching out to people on LinkedIn. Like, it was really my job to reach out to heads of customer experience, chief financial officers. I had specific titles of who they wanted me to get in the room for different lunch and learns. And so I started really building a following on LinkedIn, and that still is where my biggest audience is. So I feel comfortable there, but do I gather a community there? No, but I always make sure that I post there because I have a lot of following there. I feel like the best place that I've really grown a community other than my podcasting community is I started a private Facebook group, because I wanted to be like, hey, after, you know, we're on the podcast together, you know, follow me on Instagram, like, happy to do Instagram lives with people. But I have a Facebook group where I bounce ideas off of people. You know, I might ask the audience like, hey, I'm interviewing a guy that his entire podcast is around parents with special needs. Does anybody have any questions about parenting with a child with disabilities? And I got such a huge response to that question. Or, hey, I'm interviewing somebody that has a podcast around creativity. Do you have any questions around how to make money and parent and be creative, right? Like, anytime somebody even asks me a question, I bounce it off my audience in my Facebook group. Like, somebody asked me what makes a good podcast guest. I was like, hey, I could ask that question on LinkedIn. I could ask that question on Twitter. I could ask that question in my private Facebook group. But I do feel like the most engagement I get is from the Facebook group, because, you know, it's the people that listen to my podcast, the people that have been guests on my podcast. It's the people that have been following me from chapter to chapter. It's people that I've worked with. People that want to get more personal connect with me there. But I also am a part of a group like that on Twitter, where I'm in a podcasting group with like 80 other podcasters. I have some podcasters that message me on WhatsApp. It depends, like, where are your people And can you create a group there? I'm going to be a part of another LinkedIn audio room this week on LinkedIn. I have people that's their jam. So I would say start where your people are, start where you feel the most comfortable, where you have the most engagement, create a group on that platform, and then extend out from there. So I started on LinkedIn, then I moved to Instagram, then I moved to Twitter. Now I'm on Threads. Once you learn what works on one platform, a lot of times you can tweak those responses or tweak those polls from responses you're getting on one platform and reword it a little bit differently on another platform.
I love that. I love it. And it sounds time consuming, I have to say.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, love that, it. I love doing it.
And that's the thing right there. That's the crux of the matter is you have carved a space for yourself where you are doing what you love and loving what you do. And I think that is,
yeah,
it's fabulous. And so I'm going to ask you, you've talked about all of the different places that you are, Instagram and Threads and Facebook and whatever. I'm going to put all of that in the show notes, but I would love it if someone says, oh, I want to follow Rena, where should they go?
LinkedIn is probably the best place, because I am definitely there every day. So Rena Friedman Watts on LinkedIn. And then I also have my bettercalldaddy.com website that has all of my social media.
Perfect. Look at that. See, you're so succinct. I love that you said that, by the way, about that notion of, you know, coming down to the thing that's important. And I have like 42 different social media things. And you're like, I have two. And those are the two. And I think that that's great, because anybody who goes there can find all the rest instead of going, oh, you can be here and you can be there. And you're very smart. That's a very smart way to do it.
Thank you, Rena.
I'm ridiculously grateful that you took the time to be here and to chat with me. As you might remember, since you listened to the show, I have a silly question that I ask everybody who comes on the show. And I find that even though it's a silly question, people sometimes give incredibly profound answers, even though it's, again, silly. So the question for you is this. If you had an airplane, environmentally friendly, of course, that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
I'm going to say today that I would want it to put a message in the sky that says you matter. And the reason is because I had somebody on my podcast who said that on every one of her podcasts, Kate Walinga. She actually passed away. She struggled for a while with her health. And I just can't believe that she's gone. She's 46 years old. She was a mom of four.
Wow.
And I loved that she told everybody that they mattered. I think that the world needs more encouragement.
Mm.
And I would want to write "You Matter" across the sky, because I feel like, please tell somebody that today.
I love that. I love, love, love that. I appreciate it so much that you said that. Of course, if it were my husband saying that, he would say, "You matter, unless you're going the speed of light, in which case you energy." And that's that's how my husband, the clown, works. Rena, once again, I keep saying that, but I'm just going to keep saying it. I'm really grateful you took the time to be here. And I appreciate you and the work that you're doing so much. And I'm looking forward to the next time we connect on one or another podcast. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
You are an incredible host, and I absolutely love how you synthesize my thoughts. So I have absolutely enjoyed this collaboration, and I am so inspired by the work that you do. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Rena. I appreciate it. Wow. Well, you heard it here. Go find Rena Friedman Watts on bettercalldaddy.com or on LinkedIn. You can go to the show notes and learn more about Rena and also get those links. As always, this is Isolde Trachtenberg for the Creative Solutions Podcast, thanking you for listening and reminding you to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the show if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2024. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope.